So you want fresh foods, you want salty foods, you want sweet foods, you want savory foods, and you want liquid nutrition.
Running 100 miles seems impossible, and maybe even kind of crazy. And it is, but we believe in big crazy dreams. That's why we ran 100 miles. It was such a life-changing experience for us, we decided to devote this podcast to preparing and inspiring you to run your first ultra race.
Are you ready to feel the highest highs and the lowest lows? Are you ready to do what you once thought was impossible? Are you ready for your trail to 100? Thank you for joining us here on Trail to 100, the podcast made to help you finish your first 100-mile race. My name is Jacob Bateman, and joined along with me is my beautiful and lovely wife, Melody.
What's up?
And today, we have a returning guest. We have Julie Shoeb, one of our top downloaded podcasts. In fact, our top guest that we ever had on the show is back for more because guess what we're talking about? Nutrition.
That's right.
One of the most top reasons ultra runners DNF their first 100 mile race is because of nutrition issues. So this was worth a second talk with Julie where we got a little more in depth on some things and hit on other topics that we weren't able to talk about the first time we talked with her. So if you have not listened to her first episode, you don't necessarily have to listen to it first, but go check that one out as well.
It will be in the show notes. Yep,
it's called Ultra Running Nutrition is Not Intuitive with Julie Shoeb. But today we were able to talk a lot more. We really got into depth on electrolytes.
Because Jacob was adamant about that.
Electrolytes is huge. And so we got into depth on that. We got into depth on creating a 100-mile nutrition plan and how to start that.
Yeah.
And how essential that is. If you're not planning your nutrition, if you are not planning that out, you're basically planning the failure nutrition aspect.
Yep.
And a lot of other ins and outs in between all that. With nutrition, we were able to talk about, and I was able to talk about my diarrhea problems with her as well. So
this is an ultra running podcast, yes. So it's not an ultra running podcast without some poop talk.
Yes, so. But she gave me some great insights into that. So I know what she shares can help you in some way, form, or fashion. Big thank you to Julie for coming on the pod. So let's get to it. Well, Julie, thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the podcast for the second time. We are excited to talk with you.
Yes, I'm so excited to be back. Thanks, Jacob and Melody.
Yeah.
Totally. We have some fun questions today.
Julie, when we talked to you, it was 2020, I think. So was that 2020? No, that was 2021. Somewhere around then. Yeah. 2020 or 2021. Yeah. And we ourselves were very new in the ultra world. We had run our first 100 in 2020. And we did not know.
We're pros now. So.
Yes. We had no clue what we were doing when we brought you on our show, especially with nutrition. And you blew our minds that day. I remember after.
We were like, whoa, we are doing everything.
Yes. and it's so, now I view it as so simple. But in that moment, like I was like, oh my gosh. Julie has just shown me the light of ultra running. So first off, I got to say thank you for coming on the show then and doing that episode. Our listeners can check that one out. It's called Ultra Running Nutrition is Not Intuitive, but we are here to dig more into the nutrition world because it is a never-ending battle.
That's for sure.
Okay, so Julie, real quickly though, you have some basic guidelines that you put out on your website, that you put out on your social media for everyone to see. That those were the guidelines that blew my mind. Would you mind like just reviewing that over with us about
how many calories, yep, many carbs, kind of the basics,
carbs, protein. What are the essentials that you're looking to get into your run? For all your runs that as you're going out and doing your run that day?
Yeah. So there's four main things that you want to pay attention to when you are an ultra runner. Carbs are first and foremost the thing that you got to pay attention to, because carbohydrates are your body's easiest and quickest form of energy when you're out there being active. So our body uses fat too for energy, of course, but carbohydrates are the main metabolic pathway. And then you have to have carbs in order to burn fat for energy. Kind of cool. Mm. So carbs are what I preach to everyone, to please pay attention to carbs and not calories, because we want to make sure that our nutrition is coming from carbs. So for the majority of ultra runners, the goal for every hour when you're out there running is 60 grams of carbohydrate. Some people might need slightly less than that. I never recommend going under 40 grams of carb an hour. And then some people, I've had athletes go all the way up to 90 grams of carb an hour for their ultra marathons and have seen great success with that. There is a range there, of course, but for the majority of people, I encourage, especially if you're working with me, I encourage you to get up to that 60 grams of carb, because you're likely going to feel a lot of benefits from it. Another macronutrient, there's carbohydrates, protein, and fat. So the second macronutrient that we'd be paying attention to while we're running is protein. And this is unique to ultra running. Protein needs are really only there for events that are going to take 6 hours or longer. So the majority of ultra marathons. And we're really, really looking for an average of 5 to 10 grams of protein an hour. Protein helps actively recover the muscle, and it can also help just kind of like even out your stomach, so it can tolerate all of that carb over a longer period of time, right? For hours and hours on end. Then the other two have to do with hydration. So we're also looking at sodium intake in specifically, and 250 milligrams or 350 milligrams an hour really is like bottom of the barrel. Like that's like the very least amount that you should be getting every hour. I have some clients that go all the way up to 1,000 milligrams an hour, and that's because they've gotten very specific sweat testing done that shows them that they sweat out that much sodium per hour. But I say the majority of my clients were replacing their sodium somewhere around 500 milligrams an hour, give or take a couple hundred on either side of that. So, and then overall fluid intake is the fourth thing that you're paying attention to. And once again, so like the bottom of the barrel, you don't want to go under this, would be about 14 ounces or 400 milliliters of fluid an hour. And some, I've got some clients that replace their fluid like over a liter an hour or even higher than that. But they might have.
That's like a whole hydration pack in 1 hour. That's crazy.
Right? Yeah. So then you become like very thankful for these aid stations that are every like 5 miles on some of these races. Right. Getting dehydrated can really negatively affect your ultra running. So yeah, learning your fluid needs and your sodium needs in particular can be a game changer for a lot of people.
For sure. So one question I have is, do you pay attention to fat at all?
Yeah, that's a great question. So fat would be one of those that we're not looking for a specific gram amount per hour, like I just said, for carbs and protein. It would more or less be, we're looking out for really high fat foods, and we're making sure that we're not consuming them back to back, because really high fat foods can, well, they take longer for your body to digest them, and they can cause heartburn, they can cause indigestion, they can cause you to feel like you don't want to eat anything because they make you feel really full, right? Like if you go to a restaurant and you eat like a food, like lots of pizza or like a cheeseburger, that's going to fill you up, right? You feel really full after that. So same thing can happen when you're out there running. And fats can be really lovely sources of food, especially like late in an ultra when you're like sick and tired of eating all of the sweet stuff. So instead of getting really sick and tired of eating the sweet stuff, then I work with my clients to sprinkle in these higher fat, more savory options. But we're really careful about the timing of them because we don't want to have too much fat at once.
Okay, that makes sense.
With males and females, have you noticed a trend where do they differ at all on like the amount of carbs needed or protein or sodium? As you've worked with your clients, you notice any difference between just biological and the needs with males and females?
Yeah, that's a great question. Age definitely can play a role in how much somebody needs as well. So yeah, I definitely take gender and age and pace into consideration for how much somebody might consume. One of the bigger pieces that I see have maybe a little bit bigger impact is I find that some of my male runners like to consume a little bit more protein while they're running. And that could be related to having like just more muscle mass than like if we're stereotyping body types. So that would be one thing. Carbohydrates are really hard to get women to eat sometimes because of all of the societal messages we get about carbs. So I often find that I have to do a lot more like mental coaching around carbohydrates with women. And not to say that that doesn't have with men, because it absolutely does. And I've had a number of clients that I've worked with that we just have to work to get through that mental barrier of like, carbs are actually your best friend in this sport, and they are what are going to provide you the best source of energy. So I don't know if I have like a great, you know, percentage of differences on how much carbs a person should eat or fat or protein should eat while they're running. It's more or less encourage. It's like the way I see it is just encouraging people to not see food as the enemy and to really just encourage them to eat and see how they feel. And then we find that balance along the way for each individual.
That makes sense. That totally makes sense.
So with electrolytes and sodium, you said that it could vary. You're like, you said 350 milligrams of sodium minimum. That's like the bottom of the floor. And you said some people need up to 1,000 milligrams. That's a pretty big gap right there. Yeah. So what are ways that people can test themselves to figure out what their range is?
Welcome to the world of nutrition, Jacob. recommendations. Like I always chuckle at like the carb loading recommendations, because it's like anywhere between 6 to 12 kilograms or grams of carb per kilogram body weight. And I'm just like, this is a huge range.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So, yeah.
that's the world that we live in nutrition. Is the range is very big, and it makes sense because not everyone's needs are exactly the same. I went on a little weird tangent.
Oh, it's all good. I mean, that's kind of why where you as a coach come in, right? To help them figure that out.
Yeah. So I do have some clients that invest in sweat testing. And so that they can do either through Precision Hydration does sweat testing, but I believe you have to live near one of their locations, which they do have quite a few locations around the world. Or I've had a couple clients invest in either the H-Drop device or the NIX device. And I believe the NIX is like N-I-X, and it's just H-Drop. And these are the devices that you can wear on your body, and it will calculate how much sweat volume you're losing and how much sodium you're losing and a number of other of the electrolytes as well. So that really is like the most specific way to learn what your body's needs are, is to invest in a device like that. Otherwise, it really becomes a bit of a guessing game. And so I'll assess a person with what they're currently doing, what kind of symptoms they're having, and then give them, okay, this is what our target range for your sodium replacement per hour is. Let's do this for a couple of weeks, see how you feel on your long runs, or if you go on a race, see how you feel, and then adjust it from there. Like I just had a client who was like, just ran a 50K last weekend, and she's like, I think I need more sodium. All right, let's bump up your sodium. So it's really a guess. Like, it is kind of a guessing game, but of course we take into consideration how much they're taking in and what the conditions are and what they have felt like after, you know, they've consumed X amount of sodium and fluid every hour. And then we go from there.
So what are the symptoms if you have too many electrolytes, and what are the symptoms if you don't have enough?
Yes, this can be really confusing. Symptoms can overlap.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. It is such a bummer.
So I feel like moral of the story already is go get a nutritionist. Because this is confusing.
It is. So, yeah. So nausea, headache, swollen fingers are like the main symptoms that can happen. Increased peeing frequency during a run. Ultra-runners tend to be more at risk for what's called hyponatremia, which is where they're sweating out sodium faster than what they're replacing it. So for the most part, I assume if people are having these symptoms that they need more sodium. Unless, of course, they're replacing it at a really high rate. And then I'm like, ooh, maybe we should take it back down and see if you find that to be better for yourself. So yeah, because ultra runners are at risk of hyponatremia, I tend to, like I said, err on the side of like, oh, we need more sodium rather than less.
Okay. Yeah, I also am wondering, is cramping a sign that you're not getting enough electrolytes?
This is debatable. So there.
Why are you laughing at all of our questions? I'm just kidding.
I don't know. Sometimes I find humor in my profession where I'm just like, these questions are.
No,
like,
it is funny.
So nuanced. So yes, nutrition is not an exact science. It's not perfect. It's never going to be perfect. And it's incredibly nuanced. I like to put that out there because I think sometimes people feel like it has to be just this like totally exact thing, which for ultra
right,
pretty dialed. But I do like to put that caveat out there anyway. And here I am just contradicting myself. So what was the question again?
The question was, is cramping a sign that you're not getting enough electrolytes? Yeah.
Yeah. So there is research that would tell us that it is not related to electrolyte replacement or sodium replacement, and that it is purely based off of, I chuckle at this because it's like the research implies that people are not like fit enough. So they're like, their muscles are not trained to go out and receive the amount of stress that they're getting. And therefore it's a reaction in the muscles with all of these crazy words that I can like visualize, but can't say. So that's also why I'm laughing, because there's some people that are really good at regurgitating those words and I'm not. So there's that theory that it's not related to electrolytes at all. I semi buy into that because I have worked with enough clients now to where they say, I used to cramp a lot, and now that I've gotten better at my fueling, we've dialed that in, and I eat more, and I replace more sodium, my cramping is much better. It might not be gone completely, but like experience it much more at a minimal rate. So
okay, to me, that's what I've experienced too.
Yeah, so like we might have some research that says it doesn't have anything to do with electrolyte replacement, but like a lot of things in nutrition, right? So much of it is nuanced and a lot of it is based off of personal experience. So if replacing sodium does help you reduce your cramping, then continue to replace your sodium and hopefully you will continue to have less cramping.
So if you're cramping, it's worth it to play with your sodium to see if maybe that affects it.
I would agree with that statement. Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. I guess this is completely, I guess, more so non-nutrition related. But as you say that, it helps me understand another situation where I experience cramping. And I think it's it wasn't because of sodium. It was because I was pushing. I was on race day, you run faster than you normally do on your training runs. So your body.
You hadn't really practiced race pace outside.
I had. That's why it's so important to get your speed work in, to get your body used to going to that speed if you're going to be running that speed on race day. So it's not all just electrolyte based. So.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So that's also a really good example of where it maybe isn't related to electrolytes. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. I'm just flashing back to me falling on my butt during the race and all of a sudden me cramping really hard as I laid there on the ground. But anyways, things got better after that. But okay. So staying on the topic of electrolytes. I have a LMNT packet here in my hand. If you're watching on YouTube, you can
see. Oh, by the way, this is the mango chili flavor.
Don't buy this flavor. It's so bad.
Water should not be spicy.
We like LMNT, but not this flavor. There's a reason I have it in my hand and it's not used. But okay, so because you've just talked about sodium, but this packet says it's got 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, 60 milligrams of magnesium. I get confused when I see, like, and some of them, other ones I've seen, like, chloride mixed in. Here, I got another one.
So that's part of salt, sodium chloride.
Okay. Okay. I got another one here. It's called Relight by Redmond. And they say, let me look at the ingredients here. We got calcium in it. 60 milligrams of calcium, 50 milligrams of magnesium, 810 milligrams of sodium, 400 milligrams of potassium. For a simple man like me who grew up in Oklahoma, all those ingredients.
No offense to everyone who listens to this, lives in Oklahoma.
Yeah. We've had many guests from Oklahoma. I love my Oklahomans, but all these ingredients start to. Yeah, they start to confuse me. And so how do I account for like this potassium and magnesium added in with the sodium? Do I just not pay attention to that? Like what should I think when I see these other ingredients in here?
Yes, you bring up a really good point. So the best research that we have for ultra running is to focus mainly on sodium. So that would be my advice. However, all of those other ingredients that you listed are electrolytes, and we still lose those through our sweat. We just don't lose them at as great of a rate as we lose sodium. So sodium is the biggest electrolyte that we lose, which is why it's the main one that we pay attention to replacing. That's so, not to say that we shouldn't replace the other ones, but here's the thing. So you brought up a really good point, is that pretty much unless I haven't come across an electrolyte beverage that, well, most electrolyte beverages, I'm going to say, have the other electrolytes in them.
Yeah.
You will be getting those replaced with your sodium. So to keep it simple and to make things not overly complicated, the main thing still is to pay attention to sodium. And it would be wise to see to check if the other electrolytes are listed in your electrolyte beverage to make sure that they're there, but don't overstress about them. There is a trend right now that overfocuses on potassium on social media. I'm not on TikTok, but I like, you know, things cross over to Instagram. And so there are beverages and like influencers out there that are like preaching potassium over sodium, which is just like completely inaccurate and not what you should do. So
that's good. Way to debunk that.
Yeah.
There's always these weird trends going around, but anyways. So is there such thing as like a powder or drink that just replaces sodium, or like could you just eat pure salt? Okay, and that would be okay even if you weren't getting your magnesium or potassium.
You're going to be getting them from other foods for sure, but.
Okay.
But yeah, there's I think it's base salt is And they might, base salt, you might even have the other electrolytes in it. See, even I don't pay that close attention to the other ones. I'm just like always checking to make sure, look at the sodium number.
Sodium's
okay.
I think it's base salt where it's just like a tube of salt and you just like lick your thumb, put it on your thumb, and then lick your thumb again. So you take licks of salt.
I like that.
It's like a cow salt stick.
We need like a salt like necklace that you can just like suck on throughout the race.
Like one of those candy necklaces.
Yeah, I would like that. No, that really is a good idea. I think that actually needs to be invented.
I could see that working.
Yeah.
But that makes sense, Julie. I appreciate that answer because actually ever since our last conversation, I remember going out and being so excited, you know, about I know how much electrolytes I need. I know how much sodium. And then all of a sudden, then I grab an electrolyte, you know, supplement. And then I see all this other stuff in it. I'm like, wait, what?
Like more things to keep track of.
And I'm like, do I add those to the sodium? Like, does it make the sodium worth more? I like how you say, keep it simple, do the sodium. The other stuff, I guess, is nice to have along the way. So,
yeah, it'll fall into place. It's not one of those big, players that we have to be overly concerned about, like carb, protein, overall fluid intake, and sodium. And four things is enough, right?
To be Yeah. Especially when you're thinking about the timing and when to, you know, trying to beat the cutoff.
You've been out there for 8 hours. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't want somebody being like, I don't think I have enough magnesium right now.
Yeah. Why is that so funny?
Exactly. Okay. Now, moving on, I guess we've hit electrolytes pretty hard there.
But yeah, yeah.
You, as we followed you and see the content you put out, you do something really, you have a continued message that you really hit on. And I think it's kind of like a failure to plan your nutrition is basically planning the failure race, something along those lines, you know, that if you are not
say it exactly like that, but yeah,
no, yeah, you know, you don't set that. That's just my interpretation. and after my experiences with nutrition, that's what I've seen come true. So how do you even start planning nutrition? I guess when the client comes to you and they're just like, okay, I know these baselines, but I just really don't understand where to start on implementing them. And it feels a little overwhelming to try to implement all this. How do you guide your client to start that planning process so that they can be ready when that 100-mile race is here in 9 months?
Totally. Yeah, it can be really overwhelming because you're like, okay, I have all these recommendations, but how on earth do they all fit together? Mm-hmm. Sure that I'm getting all of these things and not too much fat or not too much fiber to throw it all off, right? So
totally.
The first step really is taking an inventory of how much you consume right now on average. And I usually tell my clients to do like go out for a 2 or 3 hour training run. Don't change a thing and just run it how you would eat what you would and then come back and assess how much did you drink? How many grams of carb did you eat? How much sodium was in there? And then did you have any protein at all? And then that gives you a baseline of what you're currently doing. The second first thing to do. So I guess the first thing is take a baseline. The second thing to do, let's make this clear, Julie. The second thing to do is to make a list of all of the foods that you currently fuel with or feel comfortable eating while you're running. Then you're going to slowly build from there. You're going to get, this is a fantastic opportunity to me to do a self-plug
to advertise your coaching.
Yes. Oh my God. So, I So weird, like oddly, like jokey and laughy right now is because it's Friday night, and I think I just like am in a weird mood. So
you know, I'm kind of feeling it too. It's just the Friday night vibes, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah. What I was going to say. Oh my gosh, I'm going to be releasing a free fueling faster ultra marathons checklist. So it's 8 things to make sure that you have on race day and that are included in your fuel plan. So here, I will tell you what is in it. And then you can hopefully by the time this comes out, I'll have published this free resource for me.
Sweet. Will they be able to find this on your Instagram?
Yes. I'll have it somewhere on there.
Okay. Right. Okay.
Of course, you can always DM me.
Okay. Okay. So,
yes. I'm a one-woman show, by the way. I don't have anybody that helps me. So I do all the
That's impressive.
So that's why I might sound a little like scattered sometimes. So on the checklist, you want to make we've talked about getting a baseline. We've talked about starting your list of foods that you know that you can tolerate while you eat. And then this checklist will help you add foods. So you want fresh foods. You want salty foods. You want sweet foods, you want savory foods, and you want liquid nutrition. There's two other things on that checklist, but they're not food related. So it's like brushing your teeth while you're on the course. And then the last one is having a food plan. So so those six things are the different types of foods that you want to get into that list of foods that you know you can tolerate while you're running. And of course, there's an infinite amount of food options out there, right? So, we want different textures. We want easy to swallow gels. We want, we want things to drink. We want crunchy foods. We want maybe even like something like a sandwich, something with multiple textures in there. Because an ultra marathon is likely taking you, if you're doing a 50 miler, it's probably 12 hours, and then 100 miler, you're out there for a day. Your body needs a lot of different types of foods. So that checklist will help you figure out what types of foods to start adding into your training runs to practice with. And then, so once you've got a nice, healthy list of foods, a lot. You've got a list of a lot of different foods that you can tolerate while you're eating or while you're running. Then the next step is you're going to look at what race you're going to do. So you're going to go to their website. You're going to look at how the race is broken down. And if you work with me, you get access to this amazing fuel planning worksheet that helps you organize everything super, super well and easy and clean. So you look where are my aid stations? Where are my drop bags? And you're going to outline that course. And then what you're going to do is you're going to estimate how much time it's going to take you to get from one section to the next. And you do that for the whole race, right? And I always tell people overestimate by a bit, right? It's always better to have too much food than not enough. And so you're going to estimate how much time it's going to take you to get from one aid station to the next. And then that's where you go and you plug in my goal is to get 60 grams of carbohydrate an hour. This section is going to take me 3 hours. So I know I need 180 grams of carb in this section. And I know I need X amount of sodium, X amount of protein, X amount of total fluid. And then that's where you plug in all of these different foods into these little sections. So really you're breaking down an ultra marathon into just multiple long runs. And then of course you can organize it in Ziploc bags ahead of time. So then on race day, and then put it in drop bags. So then you're only carrying, not more than you need to. You can plan out where you're going to be refilling your soft flasks along this too. So you're not over carrying fluid. So yeah, does that give you a breakdown of, does that answer your question?
Yeah. No, that's super helpful. So this is what I'm wondering is, actually, now that I'm asking this question, I think I'm answering it in my head, but I'm going to ask it anyways. So if you plan all this ahead, for a long run or for a race, you already have everything written out in plastic baggies. Do you ever carry like a piece of paper with you to write down like what you're eating, or do you ever keep track of it in your phone or like write it down on your arm? Do you know what I'm asking? Or do you avoid that during the race? Do you avoid that just by planning before you go out?
Yeah. So things that I've done in the past is I'll write directly on my Ziploc bags. So of course you want to label those, right? Like this Ziploc bag is for mile, you know, 25 to 35 or whatever. And sometimes I'll take Sharpie to that Ziploc bag and write details on there that I want to know about that section of the race. So that's one thing you can do, is just write it with whatever information that you want on the Ziploc bag. Or if you are a client of mine, or maybe you make up your own fuel plan worksheet, I will have clients that print them out, cut each section out, and then tuck it into each Ziploc bag so they can look at it when they're out there on the race.
Okay.
So does that make sense? And of course you have what you're planning to eat in that Ziploc bag, but sometimes it's kind of nice to see what you have.
The full picture.
And then, or maybe you are on race day and you're like, oh, I don't want to eat another awesome sauce or X, Y, and Z, insert your food there. And then instead you want something from the aid station. So then you look at this, you know, cut out from your fuel plan worksheet and say, okay, awesome sauce is 45 grams of carb. I got to make that up somewhere else. So that could be another reason why you might do something like that.
Keep going.
No.
Yeah. I'm going to interrupt you.
That was my answer to that question, was you can either write something on your Ziploc bags for that are designated for things throughout the course, or of course you can print something out earlier and stick it in the Ziploc bag.
Okay. And that you answered this, I was going to ask. So what do you do if you decide you can't eat what you planned on eating? Now, I feel like, let's say you're like on the second day of your 100-mile race, or it's 3 a.m. and you decide you don't want to eat what you want to eat. And now you have to do this math of like, okay, if I don't eat this, then it's I have to find something at the aid station with this many calories and this many carbs. How do you navigate that?
Like with your, so you're saying your stomach goes south.
Your stomach goes south and you want to eat something else. The food that you brought
does not appeal to you, and you think
you want to stick to your plan.
Okay.
You know, so how, but it's like, it's 3 a.m. and you just can't think right. And you've also been running for 20 hours, you know?
Right. Yeah. You would be normal. We should. So that's, I help people brainstorm backup plans, or I always encourage people to have an idea of what are going to be at the aid stations. I don't like people to depend on aid stations, because we've all been that runner where you get to an aid station and they don't have what they say they're going to have, or they're out of what they say they're going to have, or they have what they say they're going to have, and it just like it's been sitting out for 16 hours and it looks
Right. And you have all these runners' hands in it, and they've been wiping their nose. And
You see ants crawling in that bowl.
Totally. So this is where the answer gets really tricky, and I don't know that I have like the best answer out there for you. Crossing your fingers for you that you have a good aid station, that maybe you can pick something else. Or like go back to that plan that you have made, and hopefully you do have some other extra options in there. I just helped a client do a race plan for a 100-miler that she's running this weekend, actually. It's a looped course. So for each loop that she's going out, I'm just having her bring an extra serving of Tailwind every single time, and an extra additional extra snack of her choice. So, so, you know, cause sometimes liquid nutrition goes down easier. So then you have that backup there, or, and then you have some other option that she can pick in the moment too, right? Especially at a looped course, you have that base where you can say, oh, maybe this will taste a little bit better. That's not going to happen with every race, of course. Sometimes you're out in the middle of nowhere and you just don't have a whole lot of options. So then you just eat as much as you can and keep moving.
You just gag it down. Like,
yeah, is the best advice that I can give. And if you, I've had clients really significantly reduce how often they get sick on the course, and some clients completely resolve that they don't get sick at all anymore. Or I've had clients you know, maybe they get sick once, but they rebound from it so much faster because they, when they got sick, they were in a place where they were much more well-fueled than what they historically might have been when they got sick during their 100-mile race. And so then, you know, they puke and rally, but then they can keep eating things way more than they were be able to in the past experiences. So sometimes, you know, our bodies revolt for whatever reason, and that is life. That's part of ultra running. But
yeah,
ideally, we've gotten you to a place where you're more well-fueled and can rebound and eat more after that happens. I kind of went on a little tangent there, but I think that kind of relates to what we were talking about. So
totally. So basically, plan your nutrition and then also plan backups just in case.
Yes, absolutely.
And you're saying, do you think liquid calories are good backups to have?
I do. They're really efficient, right? They're lightweight, especially if you're carrying them in a powdered form. So, you know, an electrolyte beverage like Tailwind or Scratch or Roctane or Gnarly, those all have a decent amount of carbohydrates, decent amount of sodium. Pardon me, I'm eating my taco. They're in food. So they meet a lot of our nutritional needs. Something that I know I talked about in our first interview, or I'm sure I talked about in our first interview, but I'll bring up now because I haven't yet, is I encourage my clients to get a recovery beverage on board when they're running. So recovery beverages are high carbohydrate, most of them are. High carbohydrate. You want to find one that's high carb. You don't want these low carb or zero sugar options when you're an ultra runner. You need your carbs, which is sugar, in many different forms. So my favorite recovery beverages are Scratch. I personally like the vegan kind because I have a hard time with whey protein sometimes. Tailwind recovery is another option. Roctane recovery is another great option. Fluid Nutrition has a great recovery beverage. So recovery beverages have your protein in them, right? We've talked about how small amounts of protein while we're running ultras can be really beneficial. It's in liquid form. It's high carb. It's also high sodium and it's fluid. So it meets all four of those, you know, big things that we're looking to replace while we're out there ultra running. So backup recovery beverage would also be another recommendation.
Too. Okay.
It's an extra.
Yeah, that, you know, that's not, I don't think I've ever implemented really a recovery drink.
Yeah, oh, we hadn't done that. Yeah. I'm just thinking about.
Yeah.
Was it in Jake Kilgore's book that we were just reading about how his friend always had a protein drink for him?
Yeah.
And that was like a special treat for him on his run was like that protein drink.
Yeah. I don't know how you drink protein drinks on a run, though. I've tried it. It doesn't work out.
Yeah, that didn't
well
work for you. Okay.
Bring up a really good point because some protein beverages, they're high protein. And then because our society is so carb phobic, they make those drinks really low in carbohydrate. And so they'll, instead of putting real carb or real sugar in the drink, they'll put artificial sweeteners or sugar alcohols in the drinks. And because protein powder does not taste good, folks. They need
no.
No.
And so, and how you get something to taste sweeter is carbohydrates. But when we have a carb phobic society, they don't want to see sugar or carbohydrates in these beverages. So instead, these companies will put these artificial sweeteners or sugar alcohols in them. Artificial sweeteners don't have any calories. So it's wasted fueling, in my opinion, especially if you're going to carry something for hundreds of miles with you, you want it to be giving you energy. Artificial sweeteners don't give you energy. Sugar alcohols have a very small amount of carbohydrate in them. But the thing with those is that they're laxatives. So if you drink too much of those, you are going to be stopping on the trail to have to go poop. And so that's
it. We're just laughing.
Melody's looking at me when you say that.
Yes, Jacob has had a lot of gut issues.
Yeah. So those ingredients,
sugar alcohols, give me an example, like sugar alcohols, what are they in then?
Xylitol is probably the most common. Maltitol, it's something that ends in the all because it's
And what kind of foods? And you're going to be finding it in like the protein drinks and things, is what you're saying?
Most protein powders and most protein, like Premier Protein, those kind of beverages. You can spot it if the marketing is like 0 grams of sugar or only 4 grams of carb or something. If you see that on the label, then they have likely added some sort of sugar alcohol in their product or artificial sweetener. Sugar alcohol,
that's good to know,
will oftentimes be listed under the carbohydrates. So if you look at a nutrition label and you go to the carbohydrates and you look down, they will oftentimes be listed just as a sugar alcohol. And you can see, okay, this product has 6 grams of sugar alcohol in it or whatever. And then artificial sweeteners are a little bit harder to spot. You have to know what they're called. There's a lot of them out there. And so those would just be listed in the ingredients. And just because a product says it's all natural doesn't mean it doesn't have artificial sweetener in it. So you can't trust things that say, I mean, if you're looking to not consume artificial sweeteners or sugar alcohols, just because the basic marketing on the food says this is an all natural food doesn't mean that it's without those. If it was actually all natural, it would have real carbohydrate in it, which would be some form of starch.
Man, I wonder what it would be like to live in a world where we could trust what was written on the packaging of things. That would be nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Food marketing is really tricky. I mean, we could have a whole nother conversation about food marketing. It's a
totally
of mine and one that I like to get on tangents about because I feel very strongly about how I
decide. Oh, I bet.
Marketing. But anyway.
I wish that we could do a 5-hour podcast because I would love to hear that tangent. But anyways, we'll keep going. So one question that I have is, how do you train your body to eat and run at the same time? Because I feel like your body needs to know how to eat at all sorts of different paces, right? So what would be your recommendations there?
Yeah, this is a great question, and one that I feel like a lot of times, especially new runners, which I know you guys work a lot with new ultra runners, I often get that, like, I don't know how to eat. Like, I don't know how to eat when I'm running. And part of it is just...
It's a different concept. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Part of it legitimately is just practice and being okay with walking while you eat, because that's where we all started. I think that's part of your question. Another part of your question, I think, is how do we train our digestive system to be able to tolerate food while we're running too? I think it's
part. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So start with baby steps, right? Start with just like walking and eating during your run. Slow down and walk. And tell the people that you're working, that you're running with, hey, I have to, like, I need to eat. If you guys are okay walking with me, if they're not okay walking with you, then you should get different running buddies.
Yeah.
But so there are things that you can do. So one of the things that I have my clients do is actually practice eating during their speed workouts. If you do intervals or threshold runs or hill repeats, those are actually really fantastic opportunities to train your digestive system to be able to tolerate food while you're working at higher intensities. Because this is going to happen on race day, right? You're going to be working at, even during ultramarathons, at times you work at higher intensities. And so your body has to get used to eating while it feels uncomfortable, is basically what it comes down to. I had a client recently who was like, she told me she had intervals and I told her, like, okay, you have to eat during those. And then her response was, this sounds terrible. Yes, I'm sorry, but you're going to thank me later.
You're like, you signed up for this.
So that's one thing you can do. The other thing, as ultra runners, I truly, our recommendations are like so different from like 5K, half marathon, even marathon runners, right? Like,
totally.
I'm a true believer in like, you know, not going with the recommendations of like, okay, eat 2 hours before you go for a run and then give your body time to digest and go for your run. As an ultra runner, you need to be able to tolerate a decent amount of food and go run right afterwards. So that's another thing I encourage clients to do is like, hey, maybe try and eat your breakfast like closer to when you're starting to go for your run. It might feel really uncomfortable, but it's something that your body is going to have to get used to, right? It has to get used to tolerating food and having food in your body while you're out there running. You can't run an ultra marathon and empty. Or I shouldn't say, it's been done.
Yes.
And I know you have had them on your podcast. It's been done. It's not a method of running ultra marathons that I would encourage most people.
It's not very relatable to the average man.
Yeah, it can be done, but it's, yeah.
Yeah.
A fueling and a lot of it, because that is ultimately going to lead to better bodily functions and your enjoyment of ultra running. But
that makes sense. Opinion,
yes.
Yeah, and that's why we say Julie Shoeb is the nutritionist that's of the people, for the people. Because your tactics, I feel like your tactics are very...
Will apply to most people.
Yes, are the simplest that most people can relate to and apply today, you know?
And it will work.
Yeah. So you're right. There's lots of different ways for nutrition, but yeah, I think what you share here is very solid for the basics and just being realistic about living life.
So to keep on this topic for just one more second, if you practice, let's say you eat a big breakfast and you go run immediately to practice running with a lot of food in you, let's say you get sick, you have a rock in your stomach, you don't feel very good. Are you training yourself to run through that pain, or is your body going to learn how to digest that food? So eventually you can eat a big breakfast and go run and then you just don't have that pain, or maybe a little bit of both.
Yeah, that's a good point. And maybe a point to clarify too. Like, I wouldn't encourage eating like a huge pancake. If you've never done this before, don't go eat like a huge pancake breakfast and go run. Like, you want to do everything like pretty grassy.
That's a good clarification.
I'm going to all you can eat.
We're going to Chuck-O-Rama. Then we're going to go run a marathon.
Or the all you can eat pancakes from Denny's. Pound them, they'll stop you at 7. I found that out. So go eat the 7 giant pancakes and go on your long run and see how it goes.
That's not actually all you can eat. They're like, no,
it's not. Yes, they'll stop you at 7. And I don't know what you think about this. I actually heard of a guy, Julie, who he called it his... I don't even know. He went to all the Maverick gas stations for like a 20-mile run, and he stopped at 11 Maverick gas stations, and he fueled exclusively through Maverick food. But I thought,
wow,
Molly's on like the little rollers, or what was he eating?
Good thing the Maverick bathrooms are so nice, right?
Yeah, he didn't get into the details, but he also said he didn't bring water with him, so he had to buy the drinks at Maverick and do that, which I guess they sell water there, but anyways.
They probably have like Powerade and Gatorade.
But
interesting.
Yeah. Interesting indeed. Okay, just a couple more questions.
Let her finish that one.
I was going to say, if you do have some discomfort while you're running because of the food that you've eaten, really the best advice I would give is like slow down your intensity and walk. And then people can Google diaphragmatic breathing. Mm. So it is a way of breathing. It's a way of belly. It's like deep belly breathing that has a lot of science behind it in improving your body's ability to digest food. So a lot of people, I'll have my clients do this breathing technique leading up to races, because, you know, when we get really anxious, then we have a hard time eating. At least I do, and I know other my clients do. And so this breathing technique can help slow down and like relax that nervous system. And then therefore it actually helps your body be able to digest food better. So if you're having an issue out on the trail, that is also something that you can do, is this diaphragmatic breathing that will do a couple things for you. It'll help alleviate some maybe anxiousness. Of course, we want to like practice this ahead of time. If you haven't practiced it, then it might not work. But, and then also it can help improve your whole digestive system. Maybe get a poop through if that's what you need, or just settle your stomach for whatever reason is going on there. So that's another thing you can try. Just Google diaphragmatic breathing. I think there's a video. I think it's from the ULCA. ULCA. Yeah.
UCO?
Like that one.
Okay, UCLA.
UCLA. Sorry.
That's a university in.
Yeah.
It's oh yeah, yeah, in California. Yeah. Yeah, UCLA.
I think it's from them. It's on YouTube.
Okay.
It's a really corny, like really corny video of this lady, but she describes it really well. And so that's what I send people to watch.
I'll see if I can find that and put it in the show notes.
That sounds like something you need, Mel.
I could send you.
I've been doing that with my pelvic floor physical therapy. I've been doing lots of diaphragmatic.
Sweet.
Are you saying that I have messed up guts or something?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I think every runner, male and female, needs to do pelvic floor physical therapy. That's what I've realized.
For doing it, I prioritized doing that after Maeve, my second baby, and it was like so incredibly helpful. So good.
Oh, it has made such a big difference. Honestly, I'm like, I should have done this like just as a runner forever ago. It is, I feel like everyone needs it. It's just something that we just don't think about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I can't let you go without asking about diarrhea. Gavin, a poo question. Yes. What would you suggest if it hits? So I'm just going to tell you an experience I had last year. I got to the point, I'm not sure what I did, what I ate, what was happening that day, but I was going poo like once every mile. So about once every 10 to 15 minutes. And this kept up for a good, I would say, 10 miles. I stopped, and this is on at mile like 55 of 100 where this hit. Would you suggest doing in a situation like that where your gut, where everything is shooting through you? Or
What finally solved his problem was Imodium.
I took a doctor came up to me, saw my state, and offered me some Imodium. Do you have any other suggestions outside of that?
So if somebody has a situation like that, ideally they start prepping with somebody like me. And
yeah, because it's something caused it.
Something likely caused that, unless for whatever reason you ended up having some kind of stomach bug. If something like that happens on race day, it's hard to know how to troubleshoot and move forward because you're just in that situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
Backup Imodium isn't a horrible idea because it sounds like that's what saved you in that situation.
For sure.
So something like Imodium could be helpful. Otherwise, honestly, the options really aren't that vast, because if, you know, if you're having diarrhea that frequently for that long and you still have to go race miles and miles on end, then you really need to take into consideration your safety and your health. So that might be a situation where it warrants you tapping out.
I was this close.
So
I was this close to tapping. Yeah.
Yeah. And that would have been the right decision to make if, you know, you wouldn't have gotten that Imodium on board for whatever reason. So really, in the moment of that happening, there's not a whole lot you can do other than like, I mean, if you're like 15 miles away from your next aid station, then that's where you need to prioritize. Hopefully you have electrolyte beverage on you because you're losing a lot of electrolytes and you're getting pretty dehydrated if you're having that much diarrhea. So, I mean, it's like what you would do when you're sick at home with something like that is you're prioritizing replacing what you're losing, and you're getting hopefully some electrolytes, and hopefully you have enough on you. And then you
so recognize you're losing stuff and still try to get stuff into you, because if you're just letting things leave and not doing anything, it's just going to get worse, because then your whole body's going to start to okay. So just try to minimize the damage there.
That makes sense. So really the trick is to just keep it happening in the first place.
Keep it from happening in the first place.
Yeah, you said keep it happening.
Keep it from happening. Keep it happening.
Oh, like Melody obviously was not there.
I was like, why did everybody pause when I said that?
We want you to continue to have diarrhea every single
keep it from happening.
That's how my wife feels about me.
I mean, really, so in this situation, you're keeping yourself safe and you're replacing what you can, right? And you're getting yourself to a safe place. So you're prioritizing your health and your safety in that situation.
Gotcha.
Because that is really serious. Like, that is very, like, I cannot express enough. We can laugh about poop and throw up because it is funny, but like, it can be a serious situation for people. So I want to like at least highlight that. And then for pooping, yes, if you have Imodium, you could absolutely try it. If that stops you up and you're able to keep going, then by all means, and you feel good enough and safe enough to do that, then you can. But what I'm trying to get at is, yes, just like Melody tried to say, was we want to keep that from happening in the future. So that would be where you would really reflect and break down the foods that you had been consuming leading up to that and see if you can find any trigger foods. There are foods that will trigger things like that, like too much fiber, too much sugar, alcohol. So if there was some kind of form of fuel that you might have been consuming, whether that been the day before or leading up to that, you know, wherever it started happening for you, I don't know, 55 miles or so. So that could also have been triggering it. Those, and too much of the same type of food can cause that to happen. So I have a number of stories from people where they've fueled really with only like electrolyte beverages and gels. And then they hit at some point in time during their ultra, very similar story to what you're saying, is that they just have to stop and go poop every couple hours. And it's like they're pooping out those gels.
Mm-hmm. So
with an ultra marathon, you need multiple different types of carbohydrates, multiple different types of sugar to help with the digestive process. So if you get this too much of the same thing, it can cause a response like that.
Oh.
So those would be the three main things that would come to my mind that could potentially have triggered that situation. Believe it or not, there are clients that I've had and there are runners out there that experience this on a regular basis when they go for runs. And that it's like really sad. And usually that's more or less related to their daily nutrition. This sounds like it was more of like a one-time experience for you, Jacob. So it would be more wise to look at what you had been consuming for like 24 hours leading up to that to see if there was something that triggered that. Or on the off chance, maybe you did have like some kind of nasty stomach bug and that triggered you to have a bunch of diarrhea for a couple of hours, and then
I bet you you're getting a lot of sugar alcohols.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
is there a lot of fiber in yams?
I think so. Yeah. I would say so. Jacob had a lot of yams.
I had a lot of yams that day.
Like We like the idea of eating lots of real, quote unquote, real food, right?
Yeah.
And that is something that can happen if you're really only eating, quote unquote, real food, like potatoes and fruit, have a lot of fiber in them. And so that can, so there is a place for these sports fueling food, like fueling options. There's sports food. There is a place for that in the sport, along with real food and, all these other types of foods that we've talked about on this podcast. But what do you think you had that had sugar alcohols in it?
Well, I don't know if I actually had sugar alcohols. I
don't think so.
I was mainly eating yams that day. I had been eating sandwiches. I had these like Hawaiian rolls I made into little like sliders, and I put like turkey and parsley on them because I like the taste. It's a good change up on my palate with the parsley and things. That was a big food of choice that day.
Weren't you drinking protein drinks?
No.
I thought you were.
No, I wasn't.
Oh, okay.
I brought some, but I barely touched them because right when I tried to drink it, I was like, ugh.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I'd have to think back a little more thoroughly and go back and see, but I like to think it maybe was the yams.
Yeah.
What were you drinking that day?
I was drinking LMNT and water.
So that also could have been part of it. So Element or LMNT, whatever you say.
Who knows?
I don't know. So that does not have any carbs in it, right? So it's a zero carb food.
Right.
Correct.
Are you double checking?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm checking. No carbs. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it uses stevia. Am I right?
Yes, it does. Stevia.
Ooh.
So stevia is not a sugar alcohol, but it is an artificial sweetener. So artificial sweeteners can also cause this, especially if you're having too much of them over a long period of time, which this could have been. And sodium is best absorbed when it's paired with some carbohydrate. So that is why I'm a big fan of Tailwind, Scratch, Roctane. Those brands prioritize putting in sugar in their beverages instead of using artificial sweeteners or sugar alcohols.
Okay.
So you were replacing your sodium pretty well, but with that sugar alcohol in there, your body could have been actually getting too much sodium and not absorbing it very well, because in order for that absorption process to happen, it happens best when it's paired with carbs or sugar. So this would be my theory, and maybe a little bit of the yams, but my theory would be that just using the element alone with water could have likely triggered a reaction like that.
That makes sense.
I
actually, now that you bring that up, I wondered, I'm like, did I overload electrolytes to where
you started to get sick happened? Of element. Right?
And what I ended up doing is I switched to Tailwind after that.
That's
and
right.
That's what's powered me through the rest of my race was Tailwind. Felt a lot better once I started getting that in me.
Yeah. That's my best guess for you right there.
That's good to know.
Well, thank you, Julie. This has been yet again another hour of enlightenment.
We're going to have to do another episode because we still have lots of questions.
Yes, but
you have to let me go on my food marketing tangent.
Oh, yes. Yes, please.
Exactly. So thank you for coming on. Once again, like we were telling you before this podcast, we love what you're doing. We love how you're helping ultra runners diagnose, fix their nutrition so that they can actually get out there and enjoy race day rather than just suffer through it with a watermelon in their stomach the whole time, you know? So it's a great thing what you're doing. So where can our listeners find you if they want to learn more from you?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. So Instagram is really the best way to reach out to me. I have a couple different ways where people can work with me now. So I've got the Fueling Ultras and Beyond program. So it's like a hybrid of one-on-one and group together where people get individual feedback and also get this community aspect of getting access to other ultra runners from around the world that are just like them. So that's one way. I have an online guide now. If you're somebody that's like, no, I don't really want to work with somebody, but I maybe just want a little bit more guide, like knowledge and education on how to put all these pieces together. So that online guide is available. And then, like I said, I'll be launching this free checklist resource soon. So yeah, so Instagram's the best way. It's at ultra.running.nutrition. Send me a DM. Or of course, if you're not on Instagram, you can email me. And my email is fuelingultras@gmail.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Julie. I'd highly encourage our listeners, go check her out. At least give her a follow on Instagram, because you put out some great content just on Instagram alone that has definitely helped enlighten me and improve my running nutrition. So,
for sure.
Oh, thank you. Well, same to you. You guys put out really good information too. Melody, you put some really good information out there about exercising and run coaching and all the things. So you guys are.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, big thank you goes out to Julie Schell for joining us for a second time on the podcast. And man, she's got some good knowledge to share.
Good stuff. Yeah. Honestly, if you're someone who is super struggling with your nutrition, or that's something that you're really nervous about, reach out to her. Get yourself a coach who can help you dial in your nutrition.
Honestly, like as we talked with her, I mean, not to bag on you being a coach, but I almost thought, like, if you're going to hire a coach for anything, hire a nutrition coach.
That is the number one reason people DNF their first 100.
Yeah.
It's true. Do what works for you.
Yes. But yeah, you got to figure out what works for you. Anyways, so we'd highly recommend Julie. We also have another nutrition coach coming on the pod next week too, who has a different style. So you can hear two different styles and figure out what's best for you.
Exactly.
So my takeaways from talking with Julie is, first off, my main takeaway is, once again, I got to fix my electrolytes. That was like my first takeaway from our first conversation. So I like just thought, okay, I'm just going to start drinking electrolytes.
Which helped. That really has helped.
Yep. It's helped a lot, but I have to dial this in even more. And who knew that freaking artificial sweeteners in electrolyte drinks can give you the runs?
Right. Like,
I never would have guessed that. And I actually have not, that brand that I used on Scout Mountain 100, I have not touched it since Scout Mountain 100. Just instinctively, like my body's just like knew that was what my problem was, but I didn't like register it in my head. But I'm just like, no, I can't do that drink anymore. I've not touched it, and I'm pretty sure certain it was that electrolyte drink that gave me the runs on Scout.
Who knew?
Yeah,
I thought it was the yams.
Yeah, no, but also, like Julie was saying, I wasn't taking in enough carbs with that electrolyte. So I've even heard like low carb people will actually put in their, if they're doing a drink mix for electrolytes, they actually like put it in with Tailwind. And now that makes sense, because then they're getting the carbs.
They need that balance.
Yeah, to balance out what could give you the runs.
Nutrition, it is so complicated.
Yeah.
It's like Julie Schoep said in the first podcast we did with her, it's not intuitive. You really have to dial it in and figure out what works.
Yeah. So anyways, that was my main takeaway. Honestly, tonight I'm going to go online and I'm going to buy some salt pills, and I'm going to try the salt pills.
Awesome.
And see how that works, and start to get away from more of the electrolyte drinks, and see if I can just do the pills, and that, if that helps me dial it in more.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. So that's my main takeaway. What about you?
Yeah. So I'm also going to talk about how this has affected me personally. So my main takeaway is, I need to dial in my nutrition, and I've known that for a while, but I just have not wanted to put in the work to dial in my nutrition. I hate tracking my food. And I talked about this back in the podcast we did with Brady Wicks. And also in that podcast, I mentioned how I was going to do some meal plans and I was going to report back to you guys and say how I was doing there. Well, this is me reporting back. So Julie Show's podcast inspired me to finally put in the work. And I've been on a meal plan for a week now. And basically my plan is to just for a time period, I'm going to track everything that I'm eating outside of running, during running, and I'm taking detailed notes on when I'm eating, how much I'm eating, what my workouts are, so I can figure out what makes my body feel good. What should I eat before a workout? What should I eat after a workout? What should I eat in the mornings? How many hours should I eat before bed? I want to figure out how my body works and what my body needs. So like I said, I've been at this for about a week now, and I'm really determined this year to put in the work and get it figured out.
Yeah. And I'm doing the same thing. We're kind of eating two different styles right now, but,
kind of making our own food now.
Yeah. But, I'm like, geez, I want to quit like having a bowling ball in my stomach every 100 that I run.
Right.
Like, I am so sick of that. Like, let it be my body. Let it be my muscles that are killing me.
Well, and I've seen you go through it so many times now. I'm like, I don't want to go through that. And I remember the pain I felt in my gut on our first 100. And I want to do everything I can to avoid that. So, you know, I'm going to start putting in the work now.
All right. One last thing. I know this podcast is going long.
It's okay.
But I'm just going to brag about myself. All right.
Okay. Do it. Do it, man.
We actually had an interview with one of our guests. I'm not sure if his podcast will be released by the time this goes. But anyways, he talked about recognizing yourself and bragging yourself, you know, acknowledging it. So when I was talking to Julie and told her about what I went through at Scout, and then she basically said, like, at that point, it's okay to drop.
Oh, I felt proud of you in that moment too. I was like, that's right. My husband just pushed through that diarrhea.
That, because I've always been kind of embarrassed that like I nearly dropped and pulled, you know, like that I basically decided that I was going to drop.
Most people would have DNF'd in
your shoes. I've still felt embarrassed about the whole thing. Like, what did I think? You know, why was I thinking I could drop? But then Julie saying that, I was like, okay, that makes me feel pretty bad.
Good validation.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I also thought, anyways, yeah, my husband's bad.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, that's right. I didn't drop. I kept going and I finished that dang race.
Heck yeah.
All right. Anyways, there's my brag session. Thank you guys for all letting me get that out there. And once again, a big thank you to Julie Shob. Go give her a follow on Instagram.
All of her information is in the show notes as usual.
Yep. Yes, it is. So remember, guys, if you want to run 100 miles,
make it happen.